Information Network, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And, well, today our guest is Dr. Serge Trifkovich. Am I pronouncing that right?
You just omitted an F, Trifkovich.
Trifkovich?
Almost.
Almost. Well, you're gonna, can we just call you doctor and get by
just
to that?
Call me Serge, please.
All right, fine. Well, Serge has written a fascinating book called Defeating Jihad, How the War on Terror May Yet Be Won in Spite of Ourselves. And I think people have to really stop and think about this so-called war on terror, increasing hatred that's developing between the Muslim world and the Christian world. There are 1.25 billion Muslims. And there, many of them are adhering very closely to their beliefs in many respects. But here in the West, why we're turning away from our Christian roots and we're becoming increasingly a pagan nation. Now, you no way you can possibly maintain the sort of society we have with individual freedom, unless, of course, you have people who can rule themselves according to the rules of God. And when you have a situation where there are no rules, when you take the Ten Commandments out of our schools and out of our society, then, well, who is going to determine what people will do? And it was certainly William Penn, one of the founders of the Quaker movement, who said, those who will not be ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants. And I fear that we're very close to that today. Well, Serge, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you happened to write this fascinating book?
I'm a historian and political scientist by academic training, and I spent a large part of my working life in academia, but really my focus has been on 20th century European history and on the Cold War period. My interest in Islam is frankly entirely the product of what I immediately after 9/11 realized was going to be a massive distortion campaign by the Western elite class, i.e. the misrepresentation of Islam as something called a religion of peace and tolerance, which was entirely in the function of denying the Western heritage, denying the Christian heritage, and kowtowing to the holy cows of political correctitude, quite apart from the reality, quite apart from the facts. And my first book on the subject was called The Sword of the Prophet. It was published on the first anniversary of 9/11 in 2002 and has been something of a minor bestseller. It has sold some 65,000 copies so far. And that's the book where I tried to deal not only with the scriptural basis of Islam and the traditions of Muhammad, the prophet of Islam, but also the brief overview of almost 14 centuries of historical practice, as well as the analysis of Islam as a geopolitical project and its long-term ambitions. Defeating Jihad is, in a way, a sequel in that I really tried to focus on the concept of jihad, the holy war, as the key ingredient in the Islamic teaching that turns what is nominally a religion into a totalitarian ideology based upon permanent aggression against its neighbors. And also I tried to devise a list of specific policy recommendations and measures that need to be taken to protect ourselves.
All right, fine. And yet, of course, what we're doing is bringing large numbers of Muslims into the United States and Canada, and certainly large numbers of Muslims into Europe. In fact, it's said that there are far more Muslim children born or will be born very, very soon in Europe than there will be European children. And as the Europeans, of course, decrease their births, why the Muslims increase their births, will be...
Hey folks, Alex Jones here with an important question. When was the last time you used Pure Soap? I mean the hard-to-find kind that's all natural and not full of corrosive toxins and chemicals and detergents that just dry out your skin and have been connected to very serious health problems? Let me tell you something about the Calbin Pure Soap Company. There's a 100% unconditional guarantee on all their wonderful products. They're all natural, they're triple concentrated, they're factory direct, factory owned, and operated since 1947. Earth-friendly Pure Soaps for bathing, laundry, and kitchen. Try Pure Soap once and I'll guarantee you'll never use anything else. Now for the first time, Calbin Pure Soap is available factory direct to you and your family. Save up to 85% off supermarket and retail store prices. Call today for a Calbin Soap catalog at 1-800-340-7091. That's 1-800-340-7091 or on the web at calbinpuresoap.com.
Good morning, honey.
Wow, the weather is beautiful, the cabin is terrific, and it's the first day of our vacation.
Yeah.
Honey, is there something wrong?
Yeah, I just realized we forgot to pack the travel Berkey system. I can't drink this cabin water. And what am I going to do when I'm out on the lake? Now the whole vacation is ruined.
Honey, cheer up. I brought our Sport Berkey purifiers.
What?
Yeah, I know you're picky about not having pathogenic bacteria, organic chemicals, heavy metals or foul tastes and odors in the water, so I packed our Sport Berkey purifiers.
You know, this is a terrific cabin. And wow, have you noticed the beautiful weather?
Don't ruin your vacation. Get a travel Berkey today for only $209 or get a Sport Berkey for only $39. Call 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Travel Berkey not available in Iowa.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonance. If the resonant frequency force making the glass vibrate is big enough, the size of the vibration will become so large that the glass shatters. Using a similar principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that diseased organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Simple step-by-step instructions using pictures are easy to follow. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. 1-866-885-6625.
Dan back here, and our guest this afternoon is Serge. We're talking about his book, Defeating Jihad. And, of course, he's in academics. He has been in academics. The point that he really makes, of course, is that Western civilization was built upon Christianity and Christian beliefs, and certainly that was true for Europe as well as the United States. But as we look at Europe today, Europe is increasingly falling under the influence of the Muslims, who are immigrating in large numbers, having large families, and the Muslim tradition is not the Western tradition. In other words, Western tradition is built upon representative government, you know, independent of the religion, but the Muslim faith is Muslim society is built entirely upon religion. Everything centers around religion, and government, of course, is based upon the religion, which controls the individual. So, with that as the background, please pick up the discussion.
Well, I would go a step further and say that this is so because in Muslim teaching, all sovereignty belongs to Allah, and therefore no institution that is not based upon the Quran and the Sharia, Islamic law, is legitimate by definition. And this breeds an inherently aggressive spirit of animosity among Muslims towards the non-Muslim world, which has a very tangible and concrete manifestation in the division of the world in the Muslim mindset into Dar al-Islam, the world of faith, or the world of submission, where Islam has become prevalent, where it is already victorious, and everything else is Dar al-Harb, the world of war. And this is the kind of Manichaean black and white dichotomy that is comparable to the communist totalitarian mindset, where in Stalin's Russia, you had the first country of socialism, and then everything else was the imperialist world. And likewise, the Muslim teaching demands, mandates, jihad until the whole of the world becomes Darul Islam, just as in the communist mindset, the tension between socialism and capitalism will continue for as long as there is a single square inch of the world that has not succumbed to communist ideology.
Well, but of course, you know, certainly there are many, many people who live in communist countries who did not embrace that. They may be coming from communist nations, but they didn't necessarily believe that. It was more or less forced upon them. We have in Europe today an awful lot of Muslims. Do they still believe that they are going to take Europe simply by immigration? Or did some of them come to Europe, or many of them come to Europe, to get away from the strictness, of the oppressive religion that they espouse?
Now, this point about the desire of some to get away from the restrictions and the stifling air of a society that is, full of purely nominalistic rules about the way of life applies maybe to first-generation immigrants who still have a degree of fascination with their former colonial masters, one might say. But it is very curious that their offspring, the Western-born second and third-generation Muslims, tend to be extremely hardline and also contentious of the host society. You could see it last year during the riots in French suburbs, where young North Africans, in France obviously most Muslims come from North Africa, from Algeria and Morocco and Tunisia, were ostensibly demonstrating on the grounds of their social and economic grievances, but very soon it turned into something much uglier, with the shouts of Allahu Akbar and deliberate attacks on the whites, on the host population. Likewise in Britain, if you look at the bomb attacks in London July last year, all four of those youngsters who blew themselves up in order to blow up as many Englishmen as they could were in fact born there. They went to the state schools. They were exposed to the secular education, to radio, TV, the pop culture, and all the rest of it. And instead, they adopted a very strict and violent variety of fundamentalism. Why is this? Well, because basically a Western society based upon a post-Christian, multiculturalist, all-inclusivist, anti-discriminationist tap simply doesn't have the power to inspire and to elicit the feeling of loyalty and genuine identification in anyone, including its own native populations. Whereas to someone who is in search of the meaning of existence and a higher objective, Islam at least offers Allah in place of nothing. So whereas a lapsed Christian who goes back to his roots will find the Prince of Peace, a lapsed Muslim like those four English-born Pakistanis, when they go back in search of their roots, they will find, alas, Muhammad, part John Gotti and part David Koresh.
All right, fine. Well, I think that's really a very interesting comparison. So what are we going to do, though? What's Europe going to do with it? What are there, 20 million Muslims over there in Europe today, something like that?
Well, first of all, defense is impossible unless there is a revival of the Western world's own sense of identity and a return of the sense of community and the coherence of the native populations.
But of course, the thing is, there's a very conscious effort on the part of the elite who rule both Europe and the United States to undermine the Christian foundations of our society, certainly to and to destroy the faith, to take God and prayer out of our schools here in the United States, and the Ten Commandments, and to oppose Christmas, and to do everything they can to force the people to have simply no memory of Christianity. In Europe, they've already accomplished that. I mean, the churches are empty. I remember being on a radio program in London, one of the major call-in programs there, and people could agree with everything until I professed my belief in Jesus Christ, and then suddenly I was attacked and vilified, and everything I'd said before they agreed with, they immediately, of course, lost any memory of that. All they wanted to do was attack Christianity. And if that is true in England, which of course is one day the bulwark of Christendom in Western civilization, is there any hope of restoring that belief in Christianity that once made, Europe the envy of the world?
Well, there are two answers to this question. One is the answer that a believer would give, and that would be briefly that miracles do happen, they're possible.
We have to believe that.
We had Lepanto in 1571, we had the saving of Vienna in 1683, but as a political scientist, rather than Orthodox Christian, which I am, I would say that there is also the possibility of a life-altering event changing the dynamics of Western societies in case, for instance, of a massive meltdown of the global economy that could be contingent upon a major terrorist attack of the kind that would make 9/11 look like child's play. And it would be necessary for the elite class to be utterly discredited in its ability to manage that kind of disaster. And it's only with the meltdown of the welfare state and the rebellion of the clientele of the welfare state that we could witness both the return of faith and also the treatment of children as valuable assets, because nothing destroys so many unborn lives as 401ks and state pensions and the guarantee of state-provided secure old age. So in the long term, of course, as John Maynard Keynes would say, we're all dead. But I think that the Western civilization can survive only if it's given a catastrophic jolt of the kind that will focus people's minds on really important things. What we are witnessing now is not only the attempt by the elite class to eliminate Christianity from people's everyday lives, but also to adopt an actively hostile attitude to any remnant of both the Christian world outlook and sensibility and morality, and also the sense of ethnic pride and continuity of collective memories in the Western nations. And the sins of which this elite class is guilty are far graver, far more heinous than anything that, for instance, the colonial administration was guilty back in 1775.
Well, of course, the difficulty is that you and I, and hopefully most of our listeners, realize there is an elite class that have an agenda, that are really working behind the scenes to destroy our faith in Christianity. And really, of course, what I believe is they want is a feudalistic society, not only here and in Europe, but throughout the world. And they think they're going to be able to get the Muslims and everybody else in the world, the communists in China and the communists in Russia, and all of these people to get together into this utopian world that they're planning for us, because they're so much smarter than we are.
You see, the problem is that they don't realize that they would never be able to put the genie back into the bottle. They are hoping to use jihad as a battering ram and an ally in the destruction of the remnants of traditional institutions in the Western world, but they don't realize what they're doing is really the creation of Frankenstein's monster, because they themselves do not believe that religion is a significant factor in human experience. And having reduced all transcendence to mere narratives in the spirit of postmodernity, they believe that ultimately, Muslims will be converted through consumerism and soft porn. And the fact that it won't work is, of course, going to cost them dearly, but by that time it can be too late for all of us.
Well, I think that our only hope is things are going to have to get better, and we hope that there will be enough people out there, or perhaps God will intervene, and because, of course, God isn't going to intervene until there are enough people here that are worthy of his intervention. We're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes with Serge. Fascinating book. Fascinating.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteef spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteef exposes the movement behind Rhodes Scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
Hello, folks. This is Alex Jones introducing you to the incredible Berkey Solar Charger, your source for free solar electricity. This portable system is the size of a book when folded and small enough to fit into a briefcase, handbag, or glove compartment. The Berkey Solar Charger has been designed to power the Berkey Lights LED lamps as well as other applications such as mobile phones, radios, digital cameras, and PDAs when electricity is not available. Its multi-voltage capabilities, multiple adapters, and rechargeable batteries provide for a flexible source of auxiliary backup power. Simply place the Berkey Solar Charger in the sun, plug in your application, and you have power. Disconnect your application, and the system automatically begins charging its own rechargeable batteries. Get the incredible Berkey Solar Charger for only $75 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. And tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438.
When making important financial decisions, you should always know the facts. That's why Midas Resources is willing to pay you to read the facts. Midas Resources, a team of hand-picked financial specialists with decades of financial experience who are ready to provide you with state-of-the-art, up-to-date financial services. Midas Resources offers a host of services and stands behind their products. In fact, if you call and order their free Midas report, Midas Resources will pay you. This detailed report will provide you with financial history on the safest and most profitable areas to invest in. If you read the report, Midas Resources will send you a free Walking Liberty silver half dollar. So what are you waiting for? Get the facts and call Midas Resources toll free at 888-292-2709. That's 888-292-2709. And remember, if you read the Midas report, you'll receive a free Walking Liberty silver half dollar.
Hey ladies, if you love to shop, then visit HerbalHealer.com to browse through their online catalog. You'll find thousands of effective, alternative, and natural products for you and the whole family. Besides the amazing products you'll find, this shopping is guilt-free because you're investing in your health, and your health is priceless. While online, sign up to receive the Herbal Healer newsletter, which will keep you informed on the latest and greatest products in education. Did you know that Herbal Healer offers not only natural medicine, but also tension-relieving herbal teas, cookbooks, aromatherapy, products for pampering, and more great products to help you soothe and relax after a long day? Want to learn more for yourself and to help others in the future? Join the Herbal Healer Correspondence Program. You can work at your own pace from the comfort of your own home. This accredited, exciting program can help you gain skills and knowledge. Can you believe you can find all this at one stop? HerbalHealer.com, celebrating 18 years of dedication.
Chris, he's been in academics for many years. He's written a fascinating book on defeating jihad. And of course, it's his contention, and I agree with him totally, that if we don't once again understand the source of our strength, the source of our freedom, which is, of course, basically our religious beliefs that made up the character of our nation and of Europe, then, of course, there's going to be There's going to be a very difficult time. We may not survive as a free society. But, you know, as you talk about this elite who rules, and I'm sure you must be doing other radio programs, do the talk show hosts recognize that there really is an elite who work behind the scenes who are manipulating so many of the events going on?
Well, it is somewhat unfortunate that we are often talking among the circle of people who already share, broadly speaking, pretty similar outlook and analysis of the world we live in. One might say that it's one of the very successful ploys of the elite class to keep the discordant voices out of the mainstream, so that ultimately you end up preaching to the choir most of the time. And they do it not by battling the arguments, because I believe that the score on the nature of jihad and on the historical record of Islam is pretty clear, but simply by ignoring it. And what we have witnessed over the past few years is the deliberate and systematic distortion of reality of Islam, among other things through the constant favoritism shown to the professional apologists such as Professor John Esposito of Georgetown University, or Karen Armstrong, who has written a complete whitewash biography of Muhammad, the one comparable to the kind of biography of Lenin that you could pick up in the Soviet Union 20 years ago. And on the other hand, you have all kinds of legal obstacles to meaningful debate, which passes under the label of something called Islamophobia. And this, especially in Europe, but increasingly here in the United States, is a new catchword that is supposed to have the parity of esteem with the notion of anti-Semitism. In other words, that both are equally heinous, equally untrue, and equally worthy of condemnation. Now, very cleverly, the race relations industry in Europe has included any discussion of Islam as an ideology or as a political program under the label Islamophobia, so that already up front you have some kind of straitjacket that is supposed to set the terms of the debate, and which a priori excludes any meaningful debate. It's a little bit like discussing economy in the Soviet Union, where you could discuss all kinds of proposals for making it more efficient, but the one thing you couldn't discuss is the possibility of privatizing the means of production and de-collectivizing the farms. So what we are witnessing in the public arena is a non-debate which postulates the existence of some mysterious, peaceful, and tolerant Islam, and which upfront proclaims that any violent manifestation is an aberration which is not true to the origins of the faith. But this is an entirely Western construct and the invention of the liberal Western mindset. In Islam itself, no such dichotomy is possible, of course, and we have to bear in mind, and this is something that not many Westerners are aware of, that Muslims are not only allowed but mandated to lie to non-Muslims about their beliefs and about their ambitions. So when you hear a Muslim say that the Quran says there is no compulsion in religion, if you don't know that the Quran actually abrogates some verses with some other verses, and that most of the so-called peaceful verses were allegedly revealed to Muhammad in Mecca when he was a powerless preacher without followers, without money, and without means, and that later on, when he established himself in Medina as a warlord and the head of a theocratic state, suddenly those revelations became much more violent, and that the later revelations in Medina, such as verse 9, chapter 5, the famous verse of the sword, basically leave the non-Muslim the choice between death, conversion, and the life of second-class citizen who is forced to pay the poll tax to his Muslim masters. Now, that one verse, the verse of the sword, actually abrogated over 200 others that came before. Because in the weird Muslim mindset, Talach changes his mind.
And of course, when we get back, I want you to tell us what we're going to do with this impossible situation that we're in today, much of it our own making, but we still have to deal with some very difficult problems. We'll be right back.
Order a copy of this show for your friends and family at GCNLive.com or call 877-300-7645.
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, few months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at www.heartdrop.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
Hello, folks. This is Alex Jones introducing you to the incredible Berkey Solar Charger, your source for free solar electricity. This portable system is the size of a book when folded and small enough to fit into a briefcase, handbag, or glove compartment. The Berkey Solar Charger has been designed to power the Berkey Lights LED lamps as well as other applications such as mobile phones, radios, digital cameras, and PDAs when electricity is not available. Its multi-voltage capabilities, multiple adapters, and rechargeable batteries provide for a flexible source of auxiliary backup power. Simply place the Berkey Solar Charger in the sun, plug in your application, and you have power. Disconnect your application, the system automatically begins charging its own rechargeable batteries. Get the incredible Berkey Solar Charger for only $75 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. And tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438.
We understand that decisions related to health can be overwhelming. That is why at ResearchedHerbs.com we take pride in offering you herbs whose safety and effectiveness have been proven time and time again. For example, did you know that Live 52, the top-selling natural herbal supplement for liver diseases since 1930, is backed by over 300 research studies and clinical trials and prescribed by more than 200,000 health professionals worldwide? In fact, the effectiveness of all the herbs featured on ResearchedHerbs.com, including those for cholesterol, blood pressure, diabetes, arthritis, cirrhosis, and hepatitis, among others, is extremely well documented. Our website, ResearchedHerbs.com, was created to empower you with the information and answers you need to make the right health decisions. Researched and proven herbs at great prices. Visit us online at ResearchedHerbs.com or call 1-800-845-3841 for more information. That's 1-800-845-3841.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, our guest is Serge, and of course we're talking about his book, Defeating Jihad. How can people get your book? Do you have a website you'd like to get out?
Yes, sure. First of all, the easiest way for everyone is to get to Amazon.com, key in either The Sword of the Prophet or Defeating Jihad, and it will come up. Or to key in my last name, which is Trifkovic, T for Tom, R I, F for Frank, K O, V for Victor, I C. My website is trifkovic.mysite.com, and you can also read my Foreign Affairs commentaries on Chronicles Magazine website, which is Chronicles Magazine, one word, chroniclesmagazine.org, O-R-G. And the book is also featured on the websites of National Review Online, the Conservative Book Club, and the Regina Orthodox Press. But I think that it's interesting to note that last year, one of the leading Islamic organizations in this country, CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, went out of its way to try and ban my book by getting it removed from the website of National Review, and it even pressurized some of the advertisers with National Review, notably Boeing Corporation, to threaten that they would stop their patronage of National Review unless the book was removed. So it is obviously having some effect.
Well, I would think you'd be very flattered that they thought that much about your book. Anyway, let's get back to the terrible situation that we're in today. Whatever led up to where we are today, I think there's a growing animosity on the part of Christians and people in the West towards the Muslims, and the Muslims towards people in the West. What are we going to do? How are we going to solve the problem within our own country, where we have cities like Detroit that are predominantly Muslim, or where we have a growing Muslim population throughout Europe, growing unrest among the young who really don't have, you know, the chance to get ahead, who certainly live in sort of a state of chronic impoverishment? What are we going to do?
Well, for starters, I believe that each and every genuinely believing and devout Muslim should be expelled from any Western nation in which he resides, that the citizenship of all practicing Muslims should be revoked, because it is not possible to take the oath of citizenship, and I did so myself 6 years ago, so I know what that oath entails, and at the same time be a Muslim. You're either lying to your faith, in which case you can be sentenced to death for apostasy, or else you're lying through your teeth to your hosts. For a Muslim to swear allegiance to the Constitution of the United States, which from the Muslim point of view is infidel constitution, it is an illegitimate document of an illegitimate state, because let me remind you that only the state based upon Allah's revealed word and the will of his earthly representatives is legitimate. Swearing oath of allegiance to the United States is simply impossible for a Muslim. He is either acting in bad faith, or else he is a lapsed Muslim, in which case there is no problem, of course, but we need to clarify the issue and make sure that whoever applies for a U.S. visa, let alone for residence, for green card or citizenship, is a former Muslim. Now, of course, we will have some of them who will practice taqiyya, which is the Arabic word for the art of dissimulation, misrepresenting your beliefs and intentions to the infidel. But at least we would no longer have this nonsense that Islam is as American as apple pie, that it can coexist in peace and harmony with non-Islam, because historical record is clear that this is not the case. And I wouldn't say that there is increasing parallel animosity on the non-Muslim side towards Muslims and vice versa. Animosity to the non-believers has been a constant and salient feature of all Muslims, genuine, true Muslims, starting with Muhammad, ever since he started his prophetic career and felt snubbed by Jews and Christians who did not take his pretensions seriously. And Quranic injunctions on that front are quite clear. Do not take a Jew or a Christian for a friend, because if you do, you become one of them, and so on. On the other hand, among non-Muslims, there is a great deal of confusion, and there is, of course, the wishy-washy, squishy tendency to believe that all religions are equally good, equally peaceful, and equally benevolent. It reflects the fundamental liberal mindset that no religion really matters. So interchangeability of cultures and religions is not multiculturalism, it's anti-culturalism.
Well, of course, I can hear the screams that would come up if somebody suggested that we do exactly what you're doing now. I don't think we should ever have changed the immigration laws back in 1965 and changed the demographics of our country. But then I don't think that it benefits us to have a multicultural, multilingual society. But that's exactly what the elite want, and until we can expose the elite, we're never going to be able to change their policies.
If one of the major metropolitan areas goes up in a mushroom cloud, suddenly this kind of talk would become perfectly mainstream and perfectly legitimate. But let me emphasize that in practical terms, I advocate in defeating jihad a careful education campaign that would reclassify Islam as a political ideology that is inherently seditious and detrimental to the interests of this country. And if we seriously analyze the meaning of Sharia, of institutionalized discrimination against non-believers, discrimination against women, of the concept of poll tax, caliphate, and jihad, it becomes obvious that, in fact, we do have precedents for such treatment of Muslims, and it is really the treatment of anarchists in the aftermath of McKinley's assassination in 1903, when anarchists were targeted for deportation, and when people suspected of anarchist links were prevented from coming to the United States. Likewise, after the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917, communists were similarly targeted, and in one night alone, in 1920, 2,500 were rounded up all over the country and deported. And at that time, you hardly had telephones, let alone internet and Motorola radios. And the list goes on. If we could have legislation to keep out the Philbys and McLeans and Rosenbergs and their similar fifth columnists of Uncle Joe Stalin back in the 1940s and 50s, if the members of the Nazi Party or of a Communist Party were prevented from coming to the U.S., the same should apply to the followers of Jihad and to the potential recruits of Osama.
Well, now, what are you suggesting as far as Europe is concerned? Did they do the same thing?
Well, absolutely. And in Europe, I'm afraid it cannot happen short of massive bloodshed, because the numbers of Muslims have passed the critical threshold where they already start feeling that, if they play their hand right, the whole enchilada will fall into their lap. In Europe, the Muslims actually see the old continent as a candy store with a busted lock.
Well, sort of like so many people in Mexico look at America today. But be that as it may, then, what are we going to do with the terrible situation we're in the Middle East? We're bogged down in war in Afghanistan, which we'll never win. We're bogged down in war in Iraq, which we're not trying to win. And right now it looks like the administration, if they had their druthers, and I don't know whether they're going to get them or not, but they'd like to go to a war with Iran and heaven only knows what else. I mean, can we defeat the Muslim world with a sword like they would like to defeat us?
Well, first of all, Iraq was the wrong war against the wrong enemy at the wrong time in the wrong place.
You're absolutely right, of course.
And, in fact, Iraq provided the kind of focal point to the jihadists that they could only hope for.
Yeah, and we couldn't have done a better job.
And, Saddam was a nasty piece of work, but he certainly was no Muslim fundamentalist and no friend of the fundamentalists. It was only thanks to the American arms that an important geopolitical objective of the Shiite leadership in Tehran has been realized, and it is not only to topple Saddam, but to bring to power the clients of Iran in Iraq, the two-thirds Shiite majority who now effectively run the country, not only run the country, but also run parallel militias that are carrying out mass kidnappings and are effectively controlling the Interior Ministry and the Defense Ministry. So my answer, to cut a long story short, is that we need disengagement from the Middle East and at the same time the prevention of further infiltration of the West and the gradual clearing of the stables. As I put it in Defeating Jihad, we need to disengage from Mecca and to keep Mecca out of America.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think that what's going on over there is only going to make matters worse. I find it difficult to believe our leaders could be so inept and do such a poor job unintentionally. But everything is being done. In fact, we were just talking with a gentleman last night who was telling me that in the textbooks that are used in Saudi Arabia today, I mean, everything there is to inflame these young people against the West, and these are the supposedly cleansed volumes of the textbooks. Before that, it was really bad. Now they're just talking about cutting off hands and feet. Before, I don't know what they were talking about.
And at the same time, textbooks in California mandate for seventh graders a book called Across the Centuries, in which you have a whole chapter on Islam, which is full of outright Muslim propaganda, including exercises for children where they're supposed to dress in Islamic garb and say the Shahada, the the prayer that effectively means that you're converting to Islam. Now, can you imagine, just for a moment, if a textbook in today's California mandated that children dress up as medieval knights and that they say a Christian prayer before departing for Jerusalem to free the Holy Sepulchre? Well, of course, no, you cannot. But, yes, on the one hand, we have the world of Islam, which is more confident, more aggressive than ever since the decline of the Ottoman Empire. And on the other hand, we have the Western world on the last legs of its moral and spiritual decrepitude. And let me reiterate, what we can do is warn, is educate, but ultimately the change will come either as the result of grace of God or else as the result of a major life-altering event that will totally disrupt the equation of the hedonistic, self-centered, me now Western world.
Or perhaps both. This is sort of what I'm hoping for. In other words, I really believe the worse is better. Things are going to have to get a lot worse. And then perhaps the people will tend to turn back to God and God will intervene. That's the only sequence that I can think of that's going to possibly preserve this wonderful country that we've had.
You see, it's hard to believe that a mere 100 years ago the Western world was at the peak of its powers, that it comprised about 1/3 of the population of the world, and that it controlled over 2/3 of the landmass and its natural resources. So self-denial and self-hatred of the kind that the elite class has mandated on the Western world is so unnatural, so evil, and so opposed to the human experience of the previous 10,000 years, that one cannot but hope that ultimately, you know, the patient will wake up from the from anesthesia and realize that he is being subjected to vivisection, that the ordinary normal people, and thank goodness there are still millions of them around, will be shaken out of their lethargy, and that lethargy is being, of course, deliberately promoted through the mass media and the state education system, and take the reins of power back into their own hands.
Well, you know, what do you think about this idea that we were going to establish democracy in Iraq? And we've actually, of course, we had elections there, and we have this picture implanted in our mind of a woman wearing a shawl over her head, holding up an inked finger. And we said, now we've been successful, we've had a democratic election. What's your response to that?
Throughout the Middle East, a democratic election will not bring to power the kind of people that President Bush would like to see in power. It will play right into the hands of Islamists, because having an election doesn't mean you have a democracy. It simply means that you have an institution that can be used or misused or abused by people who do not give a hoot for democracy and are actually actively hostile to it. And this is what happened in Egypt exactly a year ago, when under heavy pressure from the U.S. State Department, President Hosni Mubarak allowed the Muslim Brotherhood, the Iqanis, to contest elections, and they swept the board wherever they were allowed to field a candidate. And in Iraq, who is the most powerful man in the country? It's not al-Maliki, the prime minister. It's Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani. And in Turkey, even Turkey, the nominal ally of the United States, you have a government controlled by Recep Tayyip Erdogan, a committed Islamist, who now claims that he is a post-Islamist. Now, you can be a post-Islamist as much as you can be a post-National Socialist. And in Iraq, let me reiterate, what we have now is de facto theocratic faction of the Shiites controlling the country in cohorts with Kurdish separatists. And until and unless the United States accepts that Humpty Dumpty will not be put together again, and that a decentralized, preferably confederalized Iraq comprising three units, a Sunni, a Shia, and Kurd, is the solution, we cannot have creative disengagement. I am greatly afraid that the Democrats will rush it and do it in the worst possible way, the way that will display American weakness as well as American folly, and that will play right into the hands of the worst kind of extremist. At least it should be a controlled damage limitation exercise, the one that would establish channels of communication with some members of the Shia, of the Sunni community, who are not fundamentalists and who are battling the coalition forces on nationalist grounds. Now, if you can drive the wedge between the fundamentalist Islamic resistance and the kind of neo-Ba'athist secular nationalist resistance, then you will be a step closer to disengagement.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts. I do hope that I can get you onto some of our other programs. You're a stimulating individual. It's a real pleasure talking to you. And I'd like you to get your website and, of course, your telephone number out once more, or how people can get your book.
Yes, once again, my website is www.trifkovic.mysite.com. It's trifkovic.mysite.com. Or else you can read my foreign affairs commentaries and analysis on chroniclesmagazine.org, one word, chroniclesmagazine.org, and the two books on Islam, The Sword of the Prophet and Defeating Jihad, are available on Amazon.com, and a signed copy you can obtain through my website.
Well, thank you so very much. God bless you.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, and we'll look forward. I'll give you a call off the air and see if we can schedule some more programs.
All the best and good luck.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Terrorism, terrorism, chemical attacks, dirty bombs, fallout, biological attack, anthrax, and to top it all off, duct tape and plastic. Alarming words for our time. But how do you protect your family during such a crisis? The video sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout was developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government. Anyone can follow the simple instructions. It's presented by a housewife as they walk you step by step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. If you're not the type who waits till it's too late, then you need the video sheltering in place. Get the critical information you need now for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 and tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at murkywater.com.
Hello, this is Amy Bjorklund. Thanks to a quantum leap in garlic research, the health benefits of 20 fresh garlic cloves are now available in one tiny capsule. With stabilized allicin, the proven power of garlic has been transformed into what is perhaps the most important medicinal product ever developed, and there's no odor. Stabilized allicin gives you and your family a safe, natural weapon that kills harmful bacteria, viruses, and funguses, all without harming the friendly bacteria in the digestive tract. This means strong immunity, fewer and shorter colds, and the best possible protection from deadly diseases, none of which prescription drugs can offer. What's more, this product can deter mosquitoes from biting you and safely keep fleas and ticks off your pets. Visit truthandexcellence.com, click the Truth and Excellence banner on GCNlive.com, or call me, Amy Bjorklund, personally at 805-595-2711. 805-595-2711.
Well, Dr. Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and we do hope that you enjoyed that program. I thought it was a stimulating program. We're in a terrible situation. What people don't really understand is that our leaders have done everything they could to get us into this terrible, terrible situation. I believe that they really want a major war in the Middle East. And you know, if we go to war with 1.25 billion people, and you think that this is not going to devastate our country? I was in Germany at the end of the Second World War. I saw the cities in ashes and in rubble, and I believe the same thing's going to happen to America, and not only from a geopolitical point of view, but from a spiritual point of view, because if God is just, His justice will not spare this country for what we have done. As far as our breakdown of immorality, as far as our breakdown of morality, as far as the murder of 50 million children, as far as supporting tyrants throughout the world, as far as embracing homosexuality and letting them operate right out of the White House, and where is the outrage from our Christian leaders in America? Why, it's deafening and it's silence. Well, this is the time I need to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you possibly can, we would appreciate your support so we can maintain our 60 outlets every week on satellite, on the Internet, on shortwave, just on radio programs. You may be hearing us on radio, but all of it is expensive. So remember, of course, Radio Liberty, and prayerfully consider whether you think we're worthwhile supporting. And then, of course, we would like very much to reprint Dr. Dennis Cuddy's great book, Secret Records Revealed. It's been out of print for some time. And, of course, you can get a case of the books pre-publication for $149.95 plus shipping. We will not certainly bill your credit card till we're actually ready to begin the printing. And we're getting started. We've got maybe about a quarter of the number of people pledged that we need to get the book reprinted. So if you'd like to get in on the ground floor and get a case of Dennis's books, it's got an index, it's got an epilogue, it's a great book. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and order a case of Dr. Dennis Cuddy's books, Secret Records Revealed. And then, of course, we hope you'll get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or you can get the DVD or the VHS of that. We've got, of course, great new DVD by Dr. David Ayoub. It goes into the background of the influenza vaccines that they're giving to our six-month-old children. They're giving to pregnant women, knowing full well the toxic and poisonous effects of the mercury, and they're simply poisoning our children. If you doubt that, you really need, of course, to get our material on the hidden agenda, on the fluoride, use of fluoride, and the terrible consequences it's having on our children. Understand, they're poisoning our children. They know what they're doing. We're dealing with evil people. We're under attack, not from the Muslims. We're under attack from people at the highest levels of our government today who hate America because we were a Christian nation. You need to get my talk on the hidden agenda, and you need to get the syllabus that goes with it that has all of the scientific studies there that you need to convince any logical person what's really going on. If you want to know about the new diseases they've created, the book is Project Daylily, written by our good friend Dr. Garth Nicholson. If you want to know more about certainly what's going on in the medical field, why, of course, you need to get books like Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, or The Miracle of Magnesium, or Statins, or I get a four-tape set on the statin drugs, or on autism, or on mercury, or on aspartame, or certainly on fluoride. And we're going to be carrying a great new DVD, and it's actually put out by our good friend Dr. David Kennedy, on fluoride in drinking water. That's fluoride in drinking water. We watched the first part of it last night. Great, outstanding, very well done. They actually had pictures in China, of areas of China where there was no fluoride in the drinking water. Then the kids were happy. They didn't speak English, but they were happy kids. And then in the areas where they had high doses of fluoride in the water, children with no expression on their face, just sort of flaccid, just sort of existing. You have to understand, we're poisoning our children with mercury and with aspartame, and they know exactly what they're doing. We'll be right back here just in a moment for the second hour of Radio Liberty.
You're
nuclear reactors provide economical energy, but would you be prepared during an accident? During nuclear disasters, great amounts of radioactive iodine are released into the atmosphere, which are then readily absorbed into the body. Medical Corps' potassium iodate gives you virtually complete protection from the most feared consequence of a nuclear accident: radioactive poisoning. Potassium iodate can protect against radioactive poisoning by filling the thyroid with good iodine. This expands the thyroid and prevents it from absorbing the harmful radio.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Well, this is Arthur Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Mr. Jim Couric, who's been in the police work for many years. He's the fifth vice president of the Organization of Police Chiefs here in America, and he works for a magazine called COP, and I'd actually asked him onto our program before, and we were talking about some of the things that are going on as far as the border is concerned, and the fact that we're not really guarding the border. The border's a sieve, intentionally, because of the policies in Washington, D.C., that are allowing massive numbers of immigrants to come into this country, or migrants, as they like to call them in Washington, D.C., because there's a planned program to alter the infrastructure, the demographics of our nation. But I thought Jim and I would talk today about the crime that is associated with this massive migration that's coming from south of the border. Jim, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on again.
Well, why don't you sort of pick the story up and we'll go from there. Just tell us, you know, you're in touch with the police officers all across the country, and it almost appears that, you know, with this tremendous influx of people coming from a different culture, there has been a tremendous increase in sexual crimes. And will you tell us what's going on?
Well, it shows, according to some of the statistics that I've seen, and first of all, it is really difficult to find figures from the U.S. government on crime committed by illegal immigrants. Usually, they will have it classified as foreign nationals, which could mean legal and illegal aliens. So it's very difficult to get a handle on just how serious the problem is. But if you look at, for example, a city such as Los Angeles, and a study was done by the Manhattan Institute, which is a conservative think tank here in New York City, the New York City area, they showed that 95% of the outstanding arrest warrants for homicide were for illegal aliens, and an additional 65% of the outstanding warrants for other types of crimes, including robbery, burglary, sexual assault, rape, 65% of those warrants were for illegal immigrants. And also they showed that approximately 350 murderers who killed American citizens escaped back into Mexico, so that it's become very difficult to get the Mexicans to extradite these people, because most of them do face capital punishment, especially in the states such as California, which does execute criminals, and other states such as Arizona, New Mexico. So it is a serious problem. I believe that once we can get at the figures that the FBI has, as far as crime statistics, their UCR, the Uniform Crime Report, and correlate that with the number of illegal immigrants who are committing the types of crimes that would appear on that report, I think we'll see that the increase in crime that we're witnessing each year, a small percentage as far as the increase, but still it is an increase year by year. We'll see that it's a result of illegal immigrants coming into this country who are committing crimes, the types of crimes that result in incarceration.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. Jim Corey, who's the fifth vice president of the Association of Chiefs of Police here in America, and he works with an organization called COPP, C-O-P-P magazine, and we've had him on before talking about the letters and reports have been put out by the retired people with the Border Patrol, who've been guarding our southern border, who say, look, we're not trying to stop the massive migration coming into the United States. And it was really a fascinating program as we find what the people working on the border really feel. They want to do a good job. They're being blocked by people who are put into supervisory positions, not because of any expertise on their part, but because they'll go along with the flow and they will refuse to enforce our immigration laws. But today, we're going to be talking about the impact of immigration, and we're talking about now illegal immigration on crime, and there are some statistics. Certainly Jim was talking about a project, I believe it was something like the Manhattan Project, that had done analysis in Los Angeles. Would you mind repeating those figures about Los Angeles?
It's the Manhattan Institute. It's a think tank in New York City. They looked at the crime statistics for the city of Los Angeles, which has a very large illegal immigrant population, and they found that 95% of the arrest warrants that are issued for murderers are for illegal immigrants. Also, 65% of the overall arrest warrants for other types of other classifications of crime. We're talking about rape, sexual assault, burglaries, robberies, grand theft auto. 65% of the outstanding arrest warrants are for illegal immigrants. So based on that, we could see that a crime problem for a city like Los Angeles or New York City or any urban community where you have a large population of illegal immigrants, you're going to see an increase in crime, and we have seen that steadily year by year. Not a large increases where we're talking about maybe 2.5%, I believe, was the last figure for a 2006 increase in violent crime. The year before, I believe, it was another 2.4%. So each year we're seeing a steady increase in our violent crime rate. And a lot of these gangs that we're talking about, especially in urban areas again, are related to illegal aliens.
Hold that thought right there, please. Well, Jim is just simply talking about the massive increase the massive numbers of crimes that are committed by illegal immigrants in certain of our cities. And then, of course, he's beginning to talk about some of these gangs, like, what is it, the MS-13, is it?
Yeah, the MS-13, I guess, is the most well-known of the bunch. But, in certain areas, for example, in New York City area, you have the Latin Kings. They call themselves the Latin Kings. In Los Angeles, you have the 18th Street Gang. In upstate New York, they just had a report about a gang of illegal immigrants known as the Riverdale Crew. They call themselves the Riverdale Crew. They're involved in not only drugs, they're involved in child pornography, they're involved in human trafficking, and they're extremely violent. These gangs are extremely violent. In fact, I believe in Atlanta, Georgia, 45% of the homicides committed in that city have to do with these types of gangs. Most of them are illegal aliens. They recruit originally, for example, MS-13 originally came from El Salvador. They were formerly a left-wing Marxist group that preached revolution in El Salvador. Some of them are military people that are trained military experts, and they now are recruiting within the United States other illegal aliens from other ethnic groups. For example, they'll recruit Mexicans, they'll recruit Puerto Ricans, they'll recruit other Latinos into their gang. So it's not exclusively a Salvadorian gang anymore. The FBI estimates there's about 30,000 belonging to that gang alone. And again, like I said, there are other gangs that aren't as popular as far as the media. They don't get the big headlines, but they exist in most parts of this country, including some areas that you wouldn't think you'd have a gang problem. If you look at Rhode Island, Rhode Island has the Crips and the Bloods and other ethnic gangs. So that would indicate to me that it's Rhode Island is ripe for MS-13 or another gang of illegal aliens to set up shop.
And I don't think the average individual gives this too much of a thought, never realizing that, of course, when you get into this state of lawlessness, eventually it's going to affect every community and affect everyone, not only, you know, with the potential threat of violence, but, of course, the tremendous expense of law and order, and then, of course, incarceration expensively. Here in California, it's estimated about 10% of our budget goes to take care of the illegal immigrants that are coming into our state, and a large part of that is for law enforcement.
Oh, sure. It is costing American taxpayers a lot of money, and I think that's a conservative figure, 10%. I think it would be you would find that it's for example, the state of California, people would believe that the federal government is reimbursing state correction facilities for incarcerating illegal aliens, but the truth is the federal government only gives them 25%. So that means California taxpayers are footing the bill, the 75% of the bill for each illegal immigrant that is incarcerated. And I understand California, their illegal immigrant population within their penal system comes to about 27%. So more than a quarter of the people locked up in California are illegal aliens. And it's not, again, it's not only California. A lot of people think this is an East Coast, West Coast problem. It's not. Even in smaller communities, we have, for example, Hazleton, Pennsylvania. They recently passed a law, which the ACLU, of course, is fighting. They passed a law allowing their police officers to enforce immigration laws. You're seeing more and more of that. You have this guy, Joe Arpaia in Arizona, who's the sheriff in the Phoenix area, and he has come under a lot of fire from the ACLU and other groups, left-wing groups, because he is enforcing on his own, without any help from the federal government, he's enforcing immigration. He's locking up people who violate our immigration laws. He came under a lot of fire when he demanded that they start studying English. He made that a condition. So you're seeing that across the country, police chiefs who are allowed the autonomy to help the federal government are working with the feds. But we have a lot of political leaders, and you have a lot of political leaders that are against enforcement of our immigration laws. Today I read a story which in El Paso, Texas, where the Mexican government complained to the United States that our Border Patrol agents were going into Mexico chasing drug dealers and human traffickers back into Mexico, and that they had entered Mexican territory. And the U.S. Congress jumped and started an investigation of this, and they may reprimand the Border Patrol agents who did this.
Those guys are just trying to do their job, and they're going to get nothing but trouble for trying to enforce our laws, which the people in New York, in Washington, D.C., have no intention of doing. And all this talk about controlling immigration, that's just all window dressing for the common folk.
Oh, it is. You know, that 7 mile, that 700 mile fence, I'm not holding my breath for it. This was a cynical attempt by the Republicans to get the conservative vote. And a lot of conservatives stayed at home. I know personally many conservatives who did not go to the polls. They couldn't stomach the Democrats either, but they didn't go to the polls based on this one issue. And it had nothing to do with Iraq, and it had nothing to do with the Foley case. It had to do with the government's lack of resolve to solve the immigration problem.
I don't think it's a lack of resolve. I think there's another agenda there, but they cannot tell the American people what that agenda is, this globalist agenda that really wants to merge the United States. It's the process of merging the United States with Mexico, and we'll have common law enforcement, we're going to share our Social Security benefits with them, we're going to have the same economy. It's all laid out in the writings that we, of course, it'll all be covered in my latest newsletter, where anybody who wants to check out and find out if it's really going on can do it if they really care. But let's get back to this crime issue. And certainly a lot of the crimes that are going on are really those of rape and pedophilia, aren't there?
Yeah, a lot of sexual predators are illegal immigrants, mostly those who come in from Mexico. The Immigration and Customs Enforcement people, for example, submit reports to different police organizations just to let us know what they're doing, the arrests that are being made, and I think at least once a week we get a report of dozens of sexual predators who not only rape adults, they rape children as young as 4 years old. We get reports on that. Some of this stuff is just unbelievable when you read the acts that are performed on children as young as 4 years old. In some cases, I received, after writing about it myself, I received a letter from an angry liberal here in the United States who claims that in their culture it's perfectly all right to do that. Well, this is the United States. In our culture, it's not.
Well, so basically, that it's really a cultural thing. And what you're saying is that sort of thing would go on in Mexico, and nobody would give it a second thought, or would give it very little thought. Well, what about the punishment for this sort of thing in Mexico? Is it as being as strict as our punishments?
No, it's not. It is not. Mexico law enforcement is a joke. Those cops are bought and paid for. Many of them actually work for the Mexican crime organizations, what we call the Mexican Mafia, for example. They hire military people and police officers because these people make peanuts as far as salary. So they can supplement their income by hiring themselves out as hired guns for the drug cartels, for the people involved in human smuggling. They have that. Now, this is why I brought up the thing about the Border Patrol, the incursion into Mexican territory by our Border Patrol people. There have been so many reports, and you're not going to read about it in the New York Times, but for example, WorldNet Daily showed pictures of military people, Mexican military people, escorting people across the border into U.S. territory. They showed one incident where they actually opened fire on deputy sheriffs who tried to apprehend them, and this has happened time and time again, and the federal government has done nothing. The minute our guys go across the Mexican border, the U.S. Congress has hearings to decide what they should do as far as the Border Patrol officers involved, the Border Patrol agents involved.
Well, of course, what this does is really discourage the Border Patrol agents from even trying. In fact, two of them are going to prison for 10 years for shooting a man that they thought had a weapon, who was a drug smuggler, had smuggled in hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of drugs, and was trying to escape. And these Border Patrol agents didn't kill him. Although they'd probably have been better off if they had, but they didn't kill him, and they're going to prison because they tried to apprehend a criminal. And that should be a pretty good lesson to anybody else down there trying to enforce the law. That, of course, if you try to enforce the law, you're going to be severely punished. What madness is this, Jim?
Well, I think it's a concerted effort on the part of our political leaders to send a message to law enforcement, especially the Border Patrol agents, that they better be careful if they decide they're actually going to enforce those laws. They're putting between a rock and a hard place. On the one hand, they're being told to do their job by their supervisors. On the other hand, when they do their job, they get into trouble.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two. And, of course, we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jim Curry from the COPP magazine, C-O-P-P magazine. A few minutes later, we'll tell you about how you can get in touch with this organization. It would be interesting to know more about it, but it's really an organization of the chiefs of police across America, isn't it?
Yes. We have about 14,000 members, command officers, police chiefs, deputy chiefs. Our membership, anyone above the rank of lieutenant who heads a police unit is eligible for membership. We also have people who are involved in Homeland Security, chiefs and directors involved in corporate security. So we're probably the largest police command organization that represents American law enforcement in the country.
Well, of course, are the officers there here in positions of authority, are they concerned about what's happening? Are they concerned about what's happening with illegal immigration? Are they concerned about this sort of soft-on-crime attitude that is being fostered by the liberals in this country, where we will punish the officers trying to enforce the law and let the criminals go?
Yeah, they are very concerned. They'll tell you off the record that they do not agree with the policies of their city. For example, a city like New York City or Los Angeles or other cities that are known as sanctuary cities where police officers are not permitted to ask a suspect for their immigration status. They do not, for example, I'll give you a perfect example, if they stop someone for speeding, okay, they give them a summons, they're not permitted to find out if this person is an illegal immigrant. They can't ask that question. The driver's licenses that they get do not stipulate what their immigration status is, whether they have a green card or whether they are in the country illegally or whether they're citizens. You now have a lot of states that are talking about driver's licenses for illegal immigrants. Some states already give them. So that really hurts law enforcement because when you stop someone and you look at their driver's license, you don't know if that's really the person that you're talking to. Undocumented means undocumented. They don't have any documentation. A lot of it is when they go to the DMV, a lot of it is taking their word for who they are and where they're from. I think it really hurts American drivers because they're involved in a lot of accidents, and if you've seen your insurance going up, chances are that you have a large illegal alien population driving around, getting involved in accidents, a lot of hit and runs, and so insurance premiums go up.
And of course, really, it's such a tragic situation. Certainly in Los Angeles, you have the head of the Catholic diocese there, Cardinal Mahoney, who is actually encouraging illegal immigration. In other words, you have a Catholic cardinal encouraging people to violate the law, and little wonder we have the problems that we have in Los Angeles, where if you go there today, it's almost as if you're in a foreign city, and you really are. The vast majority of the people there were not born in this country. And, of course, with the vast number of illegal immigrants, I mean, and about 90% of the children born at the Los Angeles County Hospital are born to the parents of illegal immigrants. But don't worry, once the child is born in the United States, the family can stay here forever. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jim Curry. And how can people get... do you have a website? Get any more information?
Sure. JimCurry.us. On that website, you can get to all the publications that I write for. There's also a link to the National Association of Chiefs of Police website, and there's links to other areas that conservatives would be interested in. I write frequently about the immigration issue. Like I said, we get reports from Not only the federal government, but we get reports also from the Border Patrol Union, who usually give us a better picture of what's going on. As I said, I wrote about the former Border Patrol agents who put together an organization and sent out a position paper on what needs to be done at the borders if we're going to be serious about securing our border. So there's a lot of things on that website that your listeners would be interested in.
All right, fine. Well, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And right now we've got Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. A few minutes ago in your discussion with your guest there, he was saying, well, this is America, and we don't do pedophilia here, or it's not accepted in our culture. You remember what you're saying there. Well, I think there's one thing that came to my mind. George Clinton Elders, under Clinton, Dr. George Clinton Elders, who said, the sex education begins at birth. There's only one thing that can mean. What are you going to do? You know, talk to the kid who's just been born? No. These philosophies are driving pedophilia. The only thing you can do to teach sex education with an infant like that is to have sex with it. And there are rising philosophies, particularly amongst our New Age movement and all the forms of Satanism, that include, they say that since these are human beings, they're sexual creatures, and they should be having sex, even at birth.
Well, I think that we've got real problems, especially not only with the increasingly pagan society and with the society that bases its morals on those of Alfred Kinsey, who was a pervert himself. But, of course, then we're bringing in people from other cultures that don't see anything wrong with this sort of thing. And I think there are a lot of things wrong with it. It does terrible harm to the child. But our liberals who are encouraging this just don't seem to care. Anything else you want to say, Mike?
Just that there's been no outcry, especially in the psychological community, against so-called Dr. Alfred Kinsey.
Do you have any comment on this at all, Jim?
Yeah, sure. Well, you're in a state right now, California, that refuses to pass legislation that protects children from sexual predators. Even the governor has been unsuccessful and getting your legislature to pass the law. They're too busy worrying about same-sex marriage and other social issues. And the cynic in me says that the reason for this is there's no votes in it for them. This is something that's going to come back to haunt us when we are raising a generation of children who are not learning right from wrong. They're learning the old hippie 1960s retread philosophy of do your own thing. If it feels good, let it ride. And that philosophy has consequences. And idiots like Jocelyn Elders haven't learned their lesson yet. They refuse to look at the evidence of their own senses and heed the evidence of their own senses.
And their own folly. Well, you know, Chris, here in America today, Because of the policies pushed by our CDC and the Joslin elders within the Public Health Service, why we have 60 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease. 60 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease. When I was growing up, when I was in medical school, we had very little sexually transmitted disease. But thanks to, the breakdown of the morality of our society, primarily the sex education in the schools, which was designed not to prevent sexual promiscuity, but to encourage it, we're where we are today. Okay.
Well, you know, James Dobson, Dr. James Dobson.
Sure.
Once had a great comparison. He said he likened sex education to having a 12-year-old son, and you go out and you teach him how to drive, and then you take the keys back from him and you tell him you can't have these till you're 18. What do you think that kid's going to do? The first chance he gets, he's going to take the keys and go out driving.
Sure.
And he likened that to the sex education.
And they know exactly what they were doing before they brought it in here, because they brought it into Sweden a decade or two before and totally corrupted that society. Well, we're going to be back in just a minute with Jim Corey. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, 464-8295, right here at Radio Liberty, and we'll get to Ben in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jim Curry, and of course, he's come from Cop Magazine. He's been working in law enforcement for a long time, and right now we have Ben calling in from Salinas. Hi, Ben. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, sir. Yes, I'm a little bit questioning as to what's going on. I realize we have a big illegal immigration problem, and I'm more concerned about the street gang problem in this whole country. And I'm saying, is it not the defined duty of the National Guards of the states to deal with these out-of-control street crime issues? And why are we not putting our Christian American voices together and insisting that Mr. Bush bring our people home as a priority to deal with our crime and our streets, not Wall Street, but Main Street?
All right. I think, Jim, would you like to respond to Ben?
Well, first of all, I have some problems with using the military as law enforcement. I have some civil liberties problems with that. I don't like the idea of armed troops on city streets. That's not what they're supposed to be doing.
Isn't that what we have at the border?
Posse Comitatus prohibits it anyway. But the use of the National Guard, I think we see what they're doing down in Texas right now. We've got about 4,000 or 5,000 of them, and all they're really doing is sitting around filing papers and taking telephone calls and running out for coffee, because they're not being permitted to actually patrol at the border. This was just something that was done before the elections, the 2006 elections, to show the American people something was being done. But it's really the Border Patrol guys that are outnumbered at the border. You know, we only have about 18,000 Border Patrol agents. If you look at a city like New York, we have almost 45,000 police officers in New York City. And that tells me, the fact that we only have 18,000 Border Patrol agents, that tells me that the government is not interested in securing our border. Or else they would hire the manpower they need, and we wouldn't have to be using National Guard troops on the border just as a showpiece. Because this is costing taxpayers money to have those guys down there.
And Ben, I really have to agree with Jim. Police are taught to police. The military is taught to kill. That's not what we want.
Okay.
In fact, the idea of using the military against the American population is a frightening thing, and you hang on as soon as we get back here. We'll let you respond. I know you want a solution. But sometimes the solution is worse than the disease. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest, of course, is Jim Curry, who comes from COP Magazine. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And Ben calls in from Salinas, and his solution was, well, let's get the National Guard out on the streets to take care of the gangs, to take care of the lawlessness, to take care of this breakdown in our society. And Jim, who's been in law enforcement for many years, responded, well, I have serious problems with that. And the reason is because police are trained to police. They're trained to really work with the people and maintain law enforcement. The military is taught to kill. They have an entirely different function in society. And our predecessors back in the post-Civil War era very wisely passed the Posse Comitatus Law, which incidentally has been repealed just last month by the good our president. But until last month, why the Posse Comitatus Law prevented the use of military forces against the American population. And I was telling Ben that I agree with Jim. I mean, what we need is good law enforcement, not to bring a military dictatorship. I mean, that's where you are when you have National Guard or military troops being used against the population. Ben, what's your response?
Well, then we can agree that the Posse Comitatus Act was wrongfully taken out because it serves the purpose of we the people with equality as the standard bearer.
You're absolutely right, and they took it out last month because, after all, we've got to be protected against the wicked Osama bin Laden. Incidentally, I went up on the Internet just before I came on the program and typed in under Google Osama bin Laden dead. There are over 2 million entries there about his death. But we can't tell the American people because they wouldn't be quaking in fear. Anything else, Ben?
Yeah, I just said, let's pray for America. It's ours to lose or it's ours to win.
God bless. I agree with you totally.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. Okay, fine. And
yeah,
again,
Ben illustrates the frustration a lot of Americans have, even conservatives who, when they really think it through, they decide that, you know, the military option is not even an option which we should consider. First of all, even when you're dealing with these gangs, you still have to obey the laws of arrest. You still have, and National Guard troops and soldiers are not educated in that. They don't take any law courses, criminal procedure law. They don't take any of that. They don't know how to conduct investigations. They don't know what's admissible in court and what's not admissible in court. And you're right, they're trained to kill. That's what we have an army for, to fight wars, not to come into the United States, to be used to control different neighborhoods within the city. Plus, as far as I'm concerned, the police power is reserved for the states. It is not a federal function, although the federal government more and more is producing a national police force. But we see what happens when the National Police Force or the feds get involved. You get a situation like Waco, where Americans, and no one seems to be upset about it, the way we're upset about Abu Ghraib or Guantanamo, no one seemed to be upset when American citizens were slaughtered by our own police, federal police.
Amen to that. Of course, people have forgotten Ruby Ridge. They've forgotten Waco. They think it can't happen to me, but ladies and gentlemen, if it can happen to those, it can happen to any one of us here. And I think that there are many, many people I've heard expressing their frustration about the border and the situation of the border. Well, let's put the National Guard on the border. No, what you want, of course, is plenty of Border Patrol people, and get enough of them. You got to get 50 or 100,000 of them. You get them down there. You train them in proper methods of apprehension, and then you allow them to do their job rather than assigning the people in supervisory positions who have no intention of guarding our border because they have a different vision. They look to a multicultural, multilingual America. They want to transform America. They hate the America we have. And, of course, they're on the winning side right now because the good people are doing nothing. So our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And our guest is Jim Curry, who, of course, has been in law enforcement for many years. And I find nothing that he says I would disagree with. In fact, I learned from him. I had never realized, of course, that there was this attitude towards sexual intimacy with children, the pedophilia, is much more prevalent in Mexico and really not dealt with harshly as it is here in the United States. These people don't understand our way of life. And you can't flood our people with people who have an entirely different culture without changing our culture and changing it for the worse forever. So
one of the things that I found is that the reason that the liberal left encourages this change in the demographics within the United States, they realized a long time ago that they could not achieve their utopian paradise throughout the world. They could not bring the whole world up to our standard of living. So they decided to bring our standard of living down to the rest of the third world. And this is part and parcel of it. You see it in the wages that are being paid to Americans keeps being reduced. The illegal aliens are now putting a lot of Americans out of business. For example, I live in New Jersey now. A lot of the people that take care of people's lawns, the landscapers, that's what they call them, landscapers. Most of the landscapers are now illegal immigrants because they charge a lot less and people want a bargain.
And I think it's just a sort of a natural way that things are. And, as long as nothing's going to happen to you by hiring illegal immigrants, why not go ahead and do it? When the government refuses to enforce the laws, when the government becomes a lawbreaker in it by itself, then no man's life or property or anything else is safe. If we are a nation of laws, then we have to adhere to the laws, and we have to insist that our government officials adhere to the laws, even if they don't agree with them. If they want to change them, then you change the laws. You don't just refuse to enforce them, and that's exactly what's going on. And, of course, this is happening in large part because the good people are not involved. If the good people were involved, if they were demanding our laws be enforced, that the border be closed, if they were demanding that they stop the catch-and-release program, that the government actually made it a federal crime that was enforced by draconian measures, for people who are knowingly and intentionally hiring illegal immigrants, this process would stop overnight. The people would simply go back home because they wouldn't have any jobs here. But if we don't do this and do it soon, I fear that we're going to pass the point of no return, and the America we know will soon become simply a remembrance of things past. Well, it's where we see this growing tempo of slowly increasing tempo of violence and crime. What are we going to do about these violent street gangs? Certainly they're killing themselves, but my understanding is at least some of them, you can't get into the gang until you've killed somebody. I remember that they had an expose on 60 Minutes, and they had some woman who appeared on 60 Minutes, a young lady, perhaps 18 or 19, who'd been in the gangs and was sick of them and wanted to get out, and she appeared on 60 Minutes. And they killed her a couple of weeks later, just without another thought. They just slaughtered her.
Yeah, well, these gangs are ruthless. They make the Italian mob, the Cosa Nostra mafia, whatever you want to call them, they make them look like choir boys as far as the extent of their violence. Whereas the mob always respected the family, these people have no respect for family. They will not only wipe out the traitor or whatever they want to call that person who betrays them, but they also kill members of their family, even little children. So you're talking about ruthless people who also, they think nothing of using deadly physical force on police officers. Over and over again, we find that a lot of police officers are being killed by illegal immigrants. We just had one down in Florida. A Haitian immigrant killed a police officer down there.
And, of course, as we become an increasingly lawless society, and, of course, we've got the people out there saying, you can't enforce the laws, you've got to be tolerant, and, we just can't punish people, the criminals. We have to understand they come from a different culture. I'm reminded of something that I learned many years ago, and that is when liberty leads to a loss of order, then eventually the loss of order will lead to a loss of liberty. In other words, when liberty leads to a loss of order, there's a breakdown of society, then the loss of order will lead to a loss of liberty. People will demand a dictatorship. They'll demand we bring in the military troops. They'll demand anything to get back to some sense of a law and order. You know, could you imagine what it would be like to live in Iraq or Afghanistan today? Don't you think a lot of people there would just as soon have the dictator back, as long as at least they'd have some stability and they wouldn't be afraid to go out of their homes? But can you, that's one thing in Iraq or Afghanistan. Could it happen here in this country? And I think if we continue allowing the gangs to operate here, why, nothing could be done. Now, aren't they making any inroads with these gangs? And what happens, what are they doing in the prison? My understanding is sometimes these gangs get into the prison and pretty soon they own the prison.
Oh, sure. You have ethnic gangs in our prison systems. You have, for example, the white gangs, the Aryan Brotherhood, the Mexican gangs, African American gangs. They're very territorial within the prison system. They're able to smuggle drugs in, and they have their own black market going on in those prisons. And there are a lot of homicides that go on in prisons. You know, when people complain about Guantanamo, and I don't care whether you're for or against what's going on at Guantanamo, but we treat those prisoners at Guantanamo 10 times better than we treat our own prisoners here in the United States. Prison is no joke, and people that have come out of prison have told horror stories about what goes on in there. And a lot of it has to do with gang violence within the prison system. And then these people, when they are released, they already have the mechanism in place for their gang, and they just continue their criminal activity on the outside of prison. A lot of our prisons, we look at them as universities for criminals. A guy goes in for marijuana, he comes out, and he's committing some really heinous crimes because that's what he was learning all the time he did for smoking a joint or whatever they locked him up for.
And, Christian, here in California, our prisons are so crowded that they're actually beginning to send our prisoners to other states because we don't have enough prisons to look after all the prisoners. In fact, our prison population is exploding. And what does that say about the future of our society when we have to start sending thousands of our own prisoners to other states, and how are they going to be treated there? Well, our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and we see this growing lawlessness here in America, mainly, in my estimation, because the people in Washington, D.C. refuse to support our immigration laws. And I believe that there really are some people who want to happen exactly what is happening, but they can't let the common people know that. They just got to believe that everybody is inept, and the police is inept, and the border guards are inept. And I don't think so. I think we've got excellent police across America, but many times the chiefs of police and the police officers are hamstrung by the local politicians. And the same thing I think is happening within the border guard. Would you agree?
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, our political leaders. I'll give you a perfect example. Hillary Rodham Clinton. You know, she's trying to present herself as a centrist. In New York, she was talking about, well, when they had the rally, the illegals rallying in New York, she gave a speech talking about how they are the backbone of the American economy and all the rest of the rhetoric that you hear. And then she gave a speech in front of another group the following week talking about or criticizing the Bush administration for not securing the border and not enforcing immigration law. And then when they had a bill go before the Senate that would have increased the number of detention beds and the number of patrol officers, border patrol agents, she voted against it. And again, most Americans, they hear her talk, and they believe actually what she's saying. And then if they look and find out how she voted on this legislation, it's almost the total opposite of what she said.
You know, she gives hypocrisy a bad name. But, you know, this is the tragedy. And the average American, Jim, really never knows how their duly elected representative votes. I know, for instance, when I ran for Congress in the 16th Congressional District against Leon Panetta, everybody in my area thought he was a moderate, you know. He got support from both the Republicans and the Democrats and the Liberals and Conservatives. He had a 95% ACLU and a 95% ADA, which is socialist voting record. But the local newspapers never told the people how he voted, and there was no way that the average individual could ever find out that he was one of the most radical left-wingers in the entire Congress of the United States, and many of the Republicans would not even speak to him because of some of the dirty tricks he'd played that should have disqualified him. And yet he, I don't know how many terms he was in, and then was eventually allowed to retire and has his own institute here and is still lauded and applauded by the local media.
Oh, yeah. You know, unfortunately, we do not have a media that tells the American people the truth. You know, Americans, they don't have the time, like maybe I do or you do, to really research these issues to find out exactly... for example, the illegal immigration issue. How do these politicians vote? You know, they say one thing, and then you find out they're voting another way. You now have John McCain, who's trying to present himself as a conservative. And as far as I'm concerned, that man is not a conservative. He has teamed up with Senator Kennedy, one of the most leftist in the Senate. He's teamed up with Russ Feingold. He's teamed up with some of the most liberal people in the Senate and passed legislation that I think is unconstitutional. For example, their bill, their campaign finance bill that prevents people from speaking out within 60 days of an election. Stuff like that. It's just the type of thing that we're seeing with these politicians, where they talk about the need to secure our border, and then when it comes time to vote, either they vote for or vote against, they vote against the bill, or they vote for the bill, but then vote against funding it. So if you say we're going to have a fence for 700 miles, during the appropriations bill, they will vote against it. So you're not going to get a fence for 700 miles.
Well, of course, when you speak of McCain and Feingold, the McCain-Feingold bill was patently unconstitutional because it limited freedom of speech for certain conservative organizations immediately for 60 days before an election. So, you know, it went to the president, and the president signed it. And he said, well, I'm signing this because I'm sure the Supreme Court will find it unconstitutional because I believe it's unconstitutional, but I'm going to go ahead and sign it anyway. And then the Supreme Court found it was constitutional. What do you think about a president who signs legislation he thinks is unconstitutional, thinking, of course, the Supreme Court's going to find it unconstitutional, and then they find it constitutional? What's wrong with this picture? Ladies and gentlemen, we got real serious problems in America. And we have people in office who have sworn to uphold our Constitution and don't believe in it. Well, I call that treason. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, Jim, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up today's program.
Well, I just want to say that this issue, immigration, I'm hoping will not go away, that the American people will continue to speak out. Don't believe what you're reading in the New York Times and in the Washington Post, because they are telling the American people that the immigration issue was not a reason for the Republicans losing power in the House of Representatives and the Senate. I believe it is probably one of the primary reasons, besides the corruption and besides the war in Iraq. I think immigration is an issue that is not going to go away, and I think these politicians know it's not going to go away. And what you're going to hear during the next 2 years before 2008 is a bunch of baloney. Unless you actually see a change at the border, and the best way to find out is from Border Patrol agents. They're the ones that can tell you what's being done at the border. You can't believe these politicians. They only care about power and about being elected. We don't have statesmen anymore.
Well, somebody once said, you know, most politicians aren't dedicated to the right, and they're not just dedicated to the left. They're just dedicated to staying in Washington, D.C., because they like being the honorable, whatever you want to call them. And, of course, they like the perks and the pension funds and all the things that go along with it. So, I mean, if they know that we're watching how they vote, and they know that there is a massive outcry in their district, they'll do the right thing, which is why the Republicans held up the amnesty legislation. I fear that it's going to get through here, this, during the lame duck session and next year. And I believe that is why, in many respects, some of the people within the Republican Party threw the election because they couldn't get the amnesty bill through. But they're going to get it through now. And if it goes through, the America we've known will cease to exist. Well, Jim, I do hope I can get you back onto some of our other programs, because we've never met, but I feel a kindred soul, and at least we have a voice, and you've got a lot of great information.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so very much for being with us.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, our guest has been Jim Curry, and Jim is with the... his website is www.jimcurry.us. That's K-O-U-R-I. Jim Curry, that's all one word, .us. And, of course, it's so important that you understand that awful lot of our police officers know what's going on, and they're very concerned about it, but they're subservient to the local authorities. And believe me, the radical left has got their people in city councils and in boards of supervisors all across America. They believe that slogan, think globally but act locally. What are you doing to preserve our society here in America today? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest today has been Jim Curry. I hope you enjoyed the program. If you'd like to get some of the material that we have on this effort to destroy America through immigration, you need to get the 4-tape set, The North American Community, The Demise of National Sovereignty, Globalism, The Secret Threat, our 4-tape set on immigration, those 3 4-tape sets, Globalism, The Secret Threat, The North American Community, and then, of course, immigration. You need to get Dr. Jerome Corsi's excellent new book. It's called The Minutemen, and it goes into great detail on the Security and Prosperity Partnership. You'll certainly want to get my October newsletter, which explains how this all fits together and what it has to do with globalism, what it has to do with what happened on 9/11, and why. The president has done everything he could to block an independent investigation of what happened on the morning of 9/11. Fascinating newsletter. That's the October newsletter. Certainly you want to read our August and September newsletters, which are available at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And if you don't have access to the Internet, we'll be glad to send you a copy if you have charge. But if you can pull it down on the Internet, that's a lot better. You can, of course, see all the various items we have there. And hopefully you'll want to get some of them. We have all sorts of tape sets and videos. We have some great videos on 9/11. We have Terror Storm, that's Terror Storm by Alex Jones. 9/11, Press for the Truth, the story of the Jersey girls, the four women who lost their husbands in the 9/11 attack. Great video. We have Dave von Kleiss's video, of course, In Plain Sight, and then we have David Wagner's, and it's now available both in video and in DVD, and it's called 9/11, The Day That Changed America Forever. It's got a lot of tape clips that we got immediately after 9/11 that have now been removed. In fact, there's one statement by Gary Hart made at a CFR meeting, and they've changed the transcript of that meeting that was held on the 14th of September 2001. The CFR actually changed the transcript to delete Gary Hart's statement, but you'll actually see the film clip of that if you will get the video, 9/11, The Day That Changed America Forever. You certainly want to get, in this influenza season where they're trying to get people to take toxic doses of mercury because they want to destroy their minds, the minds of the little children, why, you need to get Dr. David Abe's excellent video. It's entitled The Influenza Vaccine, and of course it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. He'll give you the scientific studies, the animal studies, and I just talked to Dr. David Abe today. They know what they're doing. They're poisoning our people. But do you know a better way to destroy a nation than to poison the children? And to poison not only the fertility of the person who's taking the vaccine, and their children and their children's children. You want to get this video. It's well done. It's got all the documentation, the source of documentation. And if you want to get the CD that Dr. Dave passed out with that, I will give that to you free of charge. But the video you want to have, and you want to copy it, and you want to warn people not to take the influenza vaccine, because unless they're going to take it without the thimerosal in it, you can get it without thimerosal. It doesn't do any good, but you can get it if you want to. But most people are going to take it with a thimerosal, because the doctors are going to tell them there's nothing to worry about. Well, you can go to the CDC website and look up the studies. And you can, actually, the traditional study on this was done and everybody died. And they use that to justify how safe it is. Everybody died. But then how many people, how many doctors do you think ever bothered to read those reports? When you have evil and wicked people working at the highest echelons of government who have a different worldview, why, you're in real trouble. And that's what's going on in America today. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Remember, we do carry the Berkey products, and if you get them through us, why, you get a special reward in the way of a video or DVD we produced. And, of course, we hope many of you out there will help us get Dr. Cuddy's book reproduced. And, of course, you get a case of the books for $149.95 plus shipping. Please pray for America. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
On the Information Radio Network, I'm Laura Lee Shull. Travelers getting ready to hit the skies for Thanksgiving face some new rules. Sagar Magani has the details.
On top of taking off your shoes and coats, there are limits to just what liquids and gels you can take on the plane. Each container has to be 3 ounces or smaller.
That container should be placed in a clear plastic zip-top bag of 1 quart size. That bag should be closed.
The Transportation Security Administration's Darren Kaiser says the restrictions have led to some long waits at big airports, but he's hoping all travelers get the message over the next several days. He says checkpoints will be fully staffed at peak times to try and avoid more waits.